The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
goodness. This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, May 6, 2021. The day after the Orioles' John Means threw the team's first complete game no-hitter since Jim Palmer. And it's the 90th birthday for arguably the greatest player ever, who will always be remembered for the catch he made in the 1954 World Series. Here's Willie Mays.
I was a guy when I first came up, I believed that I could catch any ball that stayed in the ballpark. I guess I was kind of cocky kid, knowing that if the ball went up, I could catch it.
With Cleveland runners on first and second, Vic Wertz, who already has three hits, moves menacingly toward the plate. DeRosa removes Sal Magley and calls in a lefty, Don Little.
Everybody said, well, it was a hard catch. No, I said, it was an easy catch.
Left-hander Vic Wertz up, and left-hander Don Little ready to go. Here's the pitch to Wertz. Here's a long drive to deep, deep center field. Mays back to the wall. Makes an incredible catch. Turns and fires it in. What a catch by Willie Mays.
The amazing Willie Mays. 660 homers. I've said on the podcast before, I'll say it again. I think he's the greatest player of all time. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Taylor Schwenk is in a makeshift studio in Long Island. And how about your man, John Means?
My guy, Orioles ace. The most exciting day for the Orioles since Clinchmas in 2016. It was a real hoot. I didn't have my eye on it, admittedly, but the text started flowing in, and I was glued, man. I mean, it's very cool. He's a cool dude. His story's amazing. You went to West Virginia University. I went there for a time, so a little bit of soft spot for me there. And then he starts talking about his dad, and oh, it just killed me. So amazing day. So happy for him and for the organization.
Yeah, we'll be talking a lot about that today. We'll be hearing from Mr. Means himself. So you said you weren't following it. How did you first get word about the no-hitter?
Shout out to my guy, Max Binstock, who I will be celebrating at a bachelor party next week. But he just texted me Means in all caps, which he has done throughout the season so far, throughout the starts, because he's been electric. We've been all over it. No one else has. But once I saw that, I'm checking on what he's doing. I didn't expect, an ongoing no hitter to be what I was going to see when I checked on my phone. But very cool and very exciting.
What a great moment for John Means. All right, some news and notes as we get started today. The Blue Jays will again make their temporary home in Buffalo starting in June. They, of course, are playing their games now in Dunedin, Florida. This is because of the Canadian government restrictions during the coronavirus pandemic. Toronto last played at the Rogers Center on September 29th, 2019. New York Mets ace Jacob DeGrom could return to the mound on Sunday against Arizona at Citi Field. He had soreness in a back muscle after his last outing, and he's hoping to play catch today and get the okay to start on Sunday. Rough news for the Cincinnati Reds. Joey Votto, their first baseman, was hit by a pitch yesterday on his left thumb, and it was determined that is broken. He is not expected to need surgery, but he could miss up to a month. All right, let's get to the good stuff. Shohei Ohtani had a really interesting play in the third inning pitching against Tampa Bay last night.
Here's Austin Meadows now on the first pitch. Hot shot. Oh, yeah. Sorry, bro. I'm just too coordinated to not make that play.
It's like, okay.
Angels television network. Line drive up the middle by Austin Meadows. Shohei Ohtani has it hit his glove, pops up in the air, and he barehands it, and he started laughing. Austin Meadows seemed to have fun with it, too. This was the first time since 2018 that Ohtani didn't allow a run through five innings pitched, but guess what? The Rays would come back to win this game in the late innings. We saw the Phillies on Sunday Night Baseball. We're going to see them again this weekend against the Atlanta Braves. They were so bad on Sunday night, but since then, they haven't lost.
And the pitch swung on, hit high in the air, deep right field. Garcia back. Track, wall, grand slam, Didi Gregorius. Fourth homer of the season for Didi Gregorius. It's a grand slam, and the Phillies with a 5-0 lead here in the bottom of the first inning.
Scott Fransky with that call, Sports Radio 94 WIP. The Phillies would win 5-4. Reds, White Sox, they were 0-0 in the bottom of the 10th because the White Sox didn't score in the top of the 10th. We'll have more on that in a moment. Tony La Russa, the White Sox manager, made a decision that a lot of people are wondering about. In the bottom of the 10th inning, this is what happened for the Reds.
And the pitch. Base hit into center field, and Jesse Winker does it again. The Reds will win this ball game 1-0. The hottest man in the National League as far as batting average, and Jesse Winker comes up huge, and you just had to know it was going to happen.
The Cowboy, Jeff Brantley, 700 WLW. Now, to get back to the top of the 10th inning, Hendricks was sent out as a runner at second base to start the extra inning because Hendricks' spot in the order was responsible for the last out in the 9th inning. However, part of that rule is that the manager does have the option when a pitcher is involved of sending the batter in the spot before the pitcher to be the runner at second base. Jose Abreu could have been the runner. Tony La Russa didn't know this until a reporter informed him in the post-game Zoom session. Here's Tony La Russa.
I wasn't aware that Abreu could have run. I thought it had to be the guy who made the last out or that spot in the order.
He said, I'm guessing you know the rules better. Now I know. Yankees and Astros, game two of that series. Giancarlo Stanton is red hot.
And there's a base hit to right field. Another RBI for Giancarlo Stanton. And the Yankees lead 6-3. He continues to wield a magic wand. Another three-hit night.
Michael Kay on the YES Network. Yankees win 6-3. They play the final game of that series today. We'll be talking with Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle about the impact of the Yankee fans booing on the Astros players. Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports. And John Means was making moves yesterday with first pitch strikes, constantly getting ahead in the count. 26 of the 27 batters he faced, he threw strike one to. Now, in the third inning, Means struck out a hitter, but the ball got away from Pedro Severino and the runner reached base, but then was thrown out stealing. Didn't seem like a big deal at the moment, but then Means kept throwing up hitless innings. In the top of the eighth inning, it was 3-0 Baltimore, and Trey Mancini put the game out of reach for Seattle.
A one. There he swings, rips it deep left field. Down the line, this one out of here. 6-0 Orioles on the three-run bomb by Trey Mancini. It's his sixth long ball of the season as Trey Mancini has opened up a nice lead for the Orioles. They lead this one by a touchdown in Seattle.
That from 105.7 The Fan. So in the bottom of the eighth inning, John Means was on the mound.
He's ahead of White, 1-2, who's strikeout prone. Here it comes. Swing and a miss, strike three. He chased the changeup. 11 strikeouts for Means. 8 innings, no hits allowed. Time to call your friends. Tweet, text, Instagram, whatever you got. We're going to the ninth inning. John Means has a no-hitter going.
And that's why Taylor got that text message, Means, all in caps. He was on the mound in the ninth inning. He got the first out, and then this happened.
The 2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. One out away for John Means as he picks up the strikeout of Sam Haggerty.
There were two outs. John Means going for the first Orioles no-hitter since Jim Palmer.
Two flyouts for Crawford in the game. The wind, first pitch. A swing and a line drive. It is caught by the shortstop, Urias. And John Means has done it in Seattle. He has thrown a no-hitter as the Orioles take down the Mariners 6-0. John Means joins the elite ranks of Orioles pitchers who have thrown a no-hitter. It is the first individual no-hitter since Jim Palmer in 1969. The first overall no-hitter since 1991 in Oakland. And today, a day that John Means will never forget. Cinco de Mayo, a no-hitter for Means as the Orioles come rushing out of the dugout, out of the bullpen, hugs all around. Means has done it. He has thrown a no-hitter against the Seattle Mariners.
I love baseball stories like this one. John Means was never a high draft pick. He was never an elite prospect, but he's just gotten better and better and better. So, of course, Seattle did have that one runner reach on the ball that got away on the strikeout. And John Means was asked about that after the game.
It's fine. It happens to everybody. It's not a big deal. And I'm just happy that I got through. Honestly, I'm happy I went complete game. I was stuck in the seventh inning. That's the farthest I've gone so far. So to be able to go eighth and ninth I was happy with that. But, you know, to get a good no-hitter, I mean, I could care less that it wasn't a perfect game.
Paul Ambigati sent along this note that this year we've already had 3 no-hitters and 13 no-hit bids through 6 innings. The record for total no-hitters in a season is 8. That has remained the record since 1884. I think there's a good chance that that record is going to be broken, perhaps shattered this year. Before we get to John Means, we'll hear from him in just a second. Jesse Rogers, Sarah Lang, Chandler Rome. ESPN Films' latest documentary, 144, takes viewers inside the WNBA's unprecedented 2020 season. It's a story of a condensed season entirely in a bubble where 144 players across 12 teams not only came together to play basketball, but also to dedicate their season to social justice. 144 premieres May 13th at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. The film will be available on ESPN Plus immediately after it airs. And as the NBA season winds down, be sure to follow all of ESPN's NBA podcast offerings, the Woj Pod, the Low Post, and the Hoop Collective. You can find them all wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So after John Means settled down and received all the text messages, all the congratulations yesterday, he spoke with our Freddie and Fitzsimmons on the radio. Give a listen.
Yeah, when he hit it, I was like, oh, please don't be shifting because it's a lefty. I was begging. And when I turned around, I wasn't sure where he was. But yeah, he was there. I mean, it's incredible. I can't even really put it into words.
Wait, just to describe for people who don't know your journey from reliever to starter, and here you are, man, throwing a no-no for the O's. Just take us back in time. You got a youngin', I mean, a bride, everything. Just take us back a few years to this moment and the journey that got you here.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. You know, in 2019, in spring training, I thought I was, you know, starting in AAA. I thought for sure I'd be going to Norfolk, and then somehow I make the team out of camp, and I'm pitching out of the bullpen, and I start off pretty well for the first month, and then I make my way into the starting rotation, and then somehow, you know, make the All-Star team, and then that next year get married, and last year I lost my dad to pancreatic cancer, and it's been pretty rough, and you know, to be able to come back, and it's just been crazy. These last 2 years, it's literally been a storybook. I just can't even describe it.
My grandfather, I lost to cancer as well, and he was like a father to me. And every day when I do something right, I feel like he's with me. When I do something really wrong, I feel like he's kicking me in the you-know-what. Did it feel like he was watching right there with you?
I did. Before I went out for the ninth, I looked at my glove. It has his initials on there. And, you know, I look and kind of see what, you know, kind of go through my mind what he would think. And you know, he was never a guy that cared about accolades or anything like that. And he was just, he's just happy that, you know, I'm playing baseball in the major leagues. And, you know, that kind of reset my mindset. I was able to keep calm, and, you know, he never put pressure on me to go out there and, you know, make the perfect pitch. He's just, you know, glad I was having fun. And that's kind of the mindset I took into today. I you know, was relaxed. I definitely felt his presence out there, and it was pretty incredible.
That's amazing. John Means, Orioles pitcher, threw a no-no today here with us on Freddie and Fitzsimmons. You're on ESPN Radio. I'm Ian Fitzsimmons. Your catcher, I'm feeling for Pedro Severino, man, because, I mean, you would have had a perfect game, but it's a passed ball third strike. But it was early in the game. I think it was a third or fourth inning, right? So did he come up to you going, man, I'm sorry? Or are you like, you were good, it was early? I mean, what was that like?
I didn't care. I mean, it happens to everybody. I'm just glad I threw the no-hitter. I'm just glad I was able to – honestly, I was just in the seventh. I was just glad that I was going back out for the eighth, because I've never gone past the seventh inning before.
Really?
So that was a new milestone. And then, yeah, now I can say I've thrown a CG and might as well throw a no-hitter with it.
Man, it's remarkable. And I don't know if you realize this, and I'm sure you do now. It's the first since 1969. I mean, that's like immortal. When you heard that news, the first no-no for an Orioles pitcher since 1969, when you think about everybody that's played for that organization, when you heard that, what was your instant reaction?
It's pretty crazy. I can't, like I said, I don't even know how to think about it. You know, it's so out of this world for me, and just, you know, it's incredible to have so many pitchers come through this organization and have the careers that they did, you know, the Mike Mussinas, the Jim Palmers, everybody. It's incredible. And to be even mentioned in the same breath as those people, it's just incredible.
Jesse Rogers covers baseball for ESPN. He was at Wrigley Field yesterday for that Dodgers and Cubs game. Jesse, but before we get to that, first off, I want to say hello. How are you doing?
Doing great. Good to talk to you, Buster.
Likewise. I want to talk about Tony La Russa yesterday getting a lot of attention for acknowledging that he didn't know the rules about how you could use another runner instead of a pitcher in an extra inning situation. I give him props for, you know, owning up to it. But on the other hand, you know, there is a conversation around baseball. There was at the time he was hired, whether or not he was the right person for the job. Is this an isolated instance in your eyes, or is this a sign of a larger issue?
Well, this is part of an ongoing situation with him. He's had a couple other mistakes. Now, not rule mistakes, but ones that you would really question in-game strategy over, things that back in the day, Tony La Russa was great at. That's what he was known for. So, yes, this is part of an ongoing thing. Now, this is an organizational coaching staff breakdown, not knowing the 10th inning rules. First-time pitching coach, first-time bench coach with a guy that hasn't managed in over a decade. Things slip through the cracks is the point I'm getting at. You don't know where it's going to come next. And this was a big, big mistake. Because if Liam Hendricks gets hurt on the base pass, forget about losing the game. If he gets hurt on the base pass, Buster, this is a $54 million mistake this team made, this coaching staff made. So, yes, this is a sign of things that have slipped through the cracks. And again, this isn't the first one. This is just the latest one.
Now, I will say, and I do think it's important to put this in the proper context of what happened yesterday. I think you'd agree with me that basically since Major League Baseball started up the coronavirus season in 2020, the way the rules have been handled is a little bit like a backyard wiffle ball game, right? Where you start the game and you're saying, okay, the lawn chair is first base, the frisbee is second base, the tree is third base. And then as you go along, maybe the rule changes because the dog picked up the frisbee, where a lot of circumstances, a lot of rules, I think have changed as we've gone along, in part because of health and safety protocol. And I think about what happened with Joe Girardi the other day, the Phillies manager. They changed the rules for how you submit your roster going into a game. You have to send one to Major League Baseball. You have to give one to the umpires. And Joe was under the impression going into that game on Tuesday night that he had added a particular reliever to his roster. Well, he goes out to call on that reliever, and guess what? He's informed by the umpires, nope, his name wasn't submitted to us, so he's not eligible for this game. And after the game, Joe was very honest. Look, I typically look at the lineup card. I double check this. In this case, I didn't. It's on me. I've seen a lot of those type of situations where it feels like everyone's sort of still feeling out these makeshift rules.
I don't disagree with you on its surface, Buster, but this is not a one-man operation. I mean, right. There's quality assurance coaches. What is a bench coach doing exactly during the game? I mean, my point being, you can assign one person to knowing every single new rule there is to know and have him ready. He could be back in the video room and or wherever in the clubhouse, and it could be the video guy who knows these rules and relays them to the bench coach, who tells the manager. I don't have much sympathy when you're talking about billion-dollar organizations with large coaching staffs. They haven't really cut those down, right, as much as they've cut down office personnel. Coaching staffs are the same. So I get what you're saying, Buster, but look, the rules are the rules. They're stated clearly. The pitching, the 10th inning rule came up in the Cubs-Dodgers game last night after coming up in the Sox game, and the Cubs did the right thing. They did not run their pitcher on the base pass. So you can know the rules. You have enough people to know the rules. I understand what you're saying, though.
I would say this, too. You know, there's a lot of conversation this week about Aaron Rodgers and his stubbornness and how, you know, he makes up his mind, this is the way it's going to go, and I'm going to go forward no matter what. I think Jerry Reinsdorf is closer to being Aaron Rodgers, the owner of the White Sox, where he made up his mind. He wanted to bring back Tony La Russa. He's well aware of what knuckleheads like me have been saying about the hiring since it took place. And I don't expect Jerry Reinsdorf to ever deviate from his plan. You have an awareness of Jerry Reinsdorf. What do you think?
No, he won't fire Tony. I mean, if this ever went south, they would do it in a mutual setting. Tony might, you know, step down or something. You know, I was asked yesterday by somebody if I thought he would step down. I said, I don't think he's stepping down this first year. He's got a multi-year deal. If things don't go well or well enough, I could see him saying, okay, this was a great try, but I'm going to move on. I don't think Tony is going to embarrass Jerry, I guess, any more than he has, if that's the right way to put it. So I think that, look, they're still a contending team. You can survive a few mistakes. You know, the big thing in Chicago yesterday on the radio and stuff was like, you can't survive them in September and October, though. You better be careful on a team that's had a couple injuries. There's not much margin for error. But I don't think Tony's going anywhere this year unless he really chooses to leave on his own. But maybe after a year, if things don't work out, you just never know. Because I don't think he's going to just sit there and embarrass Jerry Reinsdorf with this Rolls Royce of a team that he has.
Yeah, if they don't make the playoffs this year, the conversation will be very different, given all the, you know, the assets that they have. And I'm sure the willingness in midseason this year to add through the trade market. You saw the Dodgers and the Cubs at Wrigley Field last night. The Dodgers have been struggling of late. Scale of 1 to 10, what would be your level of concern for the Dodgers?
Oh, it's no more than a 5. I mean, they do have to get healthy, but I believe in hangovers, injuries or not. I believe it. I was there in 16 with the Cubs and then watched them sleepwalk through the first half in 17 and then win the division in the second half. Look, I think the Padres and Dodgers are great for the sport, but both teams have to remember there's about 140 other games to be played, because watching those teams go at it, you see great playoff intensity, but that was in April, right? And then they have to go out and play everybody else in Major League Baseball. And you see a little bit, I think, of a drop of intensity by the Dodgers, but it's probably mostly injury related with them. They've got to regroup, and we know there's injuries all over the league. I'm at a 5. I'll ask you, what do you think? They're too talented, as long as they get somewhat healthy, to be more worried than that, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd put it at a scale at 1.5 on a scale of 1 to 10, in part because I know that the Dodgers, because they've blown through the competitive balance tax threshold, when we get to July, there's no doubt what they're going to do. They're going to add in what looks like to be a great buyer's market. So I don't think that's going to be an issue for them. Last night in St. Louis, second game of the doubleheader, Francisco Lindor benched. He is struggling really badly. Again, swinging at pitches. It seemed like, you know, in the outer half of the plate, he looks like he's trying to jack home runs, Jesse. I don't know any way other to describe it. He's looking to do damage and do damage on the first pitch, like right away. And it's almost like he wants to just get his bat over with and he runs off the field. I've never seen a great player struggle to this degree. What do you got on the Mets, the National League East?
Well, first of all, I think any player that signs a deal like that with a new team after being traded or a free agent is going to press almost no matter what. There's no doubt he's pressing. Jumping the first pitch isn't a bad strategy, though. I mean, in this day and age, you don't want to get to two strikes. I don't know if this is a conscious strategic move on his part, but jumping the first pitch to avoid that long strikeout that eventually comes isn't so bad. Boy, the NL East is interesting. I know it's a lot of 500 teams. I still think they're good teams and they're beating up on each other. It was kind of predictable in some sense. Now, I don't think they're playing great outside the division at the moment, but I do think there's some runs in Atlanta for sure. Eventually the Mets. But I will say, and I said this earlier, I thought to you on a podcast, I thought Atlanta was a little vulnerable and don't the Phillies. And the Phillies aren't even playing that great, but they're right there at the top as well. I go back to health, though. Health is going to be so important. Which of these NL East teams can make it through the long haul? That is probably the storyline buster this season. You might get some teams that you didn't think were going to be there in the end, but if they're healthy for 6 months, they may be there in the end. And you see Atlanta going through injuries on their pitching staff, and they're struggling big time, but getting Max Fried back was huge. So I'm just going to say, I think the healthiest team in the NL East is going to end up being the team that wins the division.
John Means throws the third no-hitter of the 2020 season yesterday. How did you follow that?
Well, I watched it at home, and, this guy's amazing. I've watched a couple of his starts, and, boy, you talk to even the average baseball fan until yesterday. They didn't know who he was, and understandably so. He's kind of just worked his way up quickly through the ranks. I texted Brandon Hyde after the game, the manager. I said, heck of a game managing that one. You did a great job. And he's like, yeah, I didn't get any tough questions in the Zoom. Or, you know, he kind of like joked about that. But, that's the sort of player that you sort of build around in the set. Like every team is looking for every rebuilding team is looking for that kind of a guy to sort of say, okay, we're on the way in the right direction. And his change, I mean, it's pretty damn good. I mean, he is fun to watch. I will say that. And I didn't know much about him before this year.
Today is Willie Mays' 90th birthday. In your mind, who's the greatest baseball player ever?
The greatest baseball player ever? Well, Mays is number one or two. Mays is number one or two, and I'm trying to think who the other guy is. That's the category that he's in. There's probably a lot of guys you could say are close, equal maybe, but definitely not better than. So, without the steroids, Barry Bonds is pretty damn close. Pretty darn close, considering I'm one of those guys that think he was a Hall of Famer before any of that happened. So just if you kind of take his career and throw that part out of it, he's pretty darn close. But I would probably put Willie Mays number one.
Yeah, as I said at the top of the show, he absolutely is number one for me. And I know it's like one of those ones, if you send out on social media, yeah, Barry Bonds, the number one player of all time, just run and hide after with the responses that you would generate with that.
Well, I wouldn't vote him in. I wouldn't vote him in, but because I'm, in that category, but I definitely think he was one of the best of all time, even before that all went down. I think you'd have to put Babe Ruth still in the category just because of what he was doing when no one else was doing it. But, that's going back to an era that only, you covered, Buster.
Oh, my goodness. What a cheap gut. All right, Jesse, thanks for doing this.
Good talking to you.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, you always have fun thinking about how excited you get over these great moments in baseball. You must have been losing your mind during that John Means no-hitter because, of course, you were preparing for a broadcast last night at the same time. How did you handle all that?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it was great. We had a handful of afternoon games, and of course, something like that happens. But it was just so exciting to see. And, you know, the way the Mariners offense has been looking, especially this year, it sort of felt like one of those inevitable ones once we got to maybe even the sixth or seventh inning. So in some ways in the ninth inning, I was like, oh, yeah, of course he did that, you know, but it was just so exciting to see. I love to see the celebration, everything else. And I loved it in a day game. I mean, we were going back and forth about T-Mobile Park and the handful of no-hitters that have been there since 2012, five, the most of any venue, and four of those have been day games. And I just love the day game, like, background when you see these pictures and videos the next day.
I absolutely believe there is not coincidence to the fact that we see a lot of these no-hitters in day games and in Seattle in the last decade. And I've talked to players about this because, as you know, it's longer to get to Seattle for teams than it is any other place, pretty much, as they travel across the country. And getaway day is probably means it's the day after players were out the night before. And so maybe they're a little sluggish. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, so I looked into that when you mentioned that. And so I said four of them were day games. And of those four day games, I believe it's three of them were like a Wednesday or a Thursday noon local game. So there you go. I mean, that's your getaway day. It was the Hisashi Iwakuma no-hitter, Felix Hernandez's perfect game. And then yesterday were all those afternoon games on a Wednesday.
Exactly. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is one. So speaking of that no-hitter, John Means became the first pitcher in MLB history to throw a non-perfect no-hitter in which the team did not record a walk, hit by pitch, or an error, according to Elias. So we all saw what happened with that Sam Haggerty at bat in the third inning, reaching on the strikeout. That's what kept him from being perfect. I'm just going to go out there and say that people who think that, you know, there's been some discussion of this as a controversy. It's not a perfect game. Someone reached base. I think that's pretty cut and dry. I know we've had some other back and forths about the definition of a no-hitter lately. I put this in a kind of different bucket. But, I mean, he was outstanding. 12 strikeouts are the most by any Orioles or Browns pitcher in a no-hitter. 96.3% first pitch strikes. That's 26 of 27, which is the highest first pitch strike rate in any complete game in the last 30 seasons. I mean, he was absolutely outstanding. It was really a joy to watch.
Number two.
Number two is eight. So Giancarlo Stanton now has eight home runs in 26 games this season. He hit seven home runs in 41 regular season games since 2019 and 2020. And it's just been great to see him really come into his own these last 2 weeks or so. This is the Giancarlo Stanton that the Yankees traded for. And it seems like he's finally healthy. He's doing what he should be doing. And the team is really benefiting. So since April 22nd, he's hitting .500, which doesn't even feel real because that's not a 1 week span. That's a decent amount of games. That's the best in the majors. And the Yankees are 10-3 in that time, which is tied for the best record in that span. So, you know, correlation, not causation, but there's definitely something there. And it's really cool to see.
Number one.
Number one is 77. So that's how many strikeouts Shane Bieber now has through seven starts this season. So that's tied with Gerrit Cole in 2018 for the third most by a pitcher in his first seven starts of a season in the modern era, which is since 1900. Trails only Pedro Martinez in 2000, he had 82. And Curt Schilling in 1998, he had 78. And part of what stands out to me with this is that Bieber didn't look his best yesterday, and he's still on this list. So I think that tells you how great of a pitcher he is and just how many strikeouts we're seeing. I mean, he's had a couple starts here where it doesn't seem like he's going to move up this list very notably. And by the end of the start, he is there because this is the way the game is right now. And this is how good he is at doing this. Even when he doesn't look his best, he's still reaching those 8 or 9 strikeouts in pretty much every start.
So yesterday, Francisco Lindor in a Mets doubleheader against St. Louis Cardinals goes hitless in the first game, and then he was benched in the second game with his numbers down to a 157 average, a 276 on-base percentage, a 202 slugging percentage. You know, I talked about this earlier in the podcast, earlier this week on the podcast, Sarah. It really is beginning to feel like he's racing through his at-bats mentally. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I think that just watching him hit, it feels like the definition of a player who's pressing. And I know I've seen multiple breakdowns at this point about his swing really looking different, which is very concerning. I mean, I think whenever you see that a guy not just isn't having the results, but that there is a direct sort of physical difference like that, I find that very concerning, because that's something that, you know, you think about habits, probably shouldn't be able to change that quickly. And yet here it is, and you're having those bad results, you know, thanks to that. But I think it makes sense. I hope that, you know, maybe the day off or the partial game off helps him sort of clear his head and get back to a different place. But you know, it was funny. I mean, that second Mets game, they kind of won with their B squad or almost C squad. And in the first game, there were kind of more regulars playing and it didn't go as well.
Before you go, Sarah, today is Willie Mays' 90th birthday. I said at the top of the show, I think Willie Mays is the greatest player of all time. Who do you think of as being the greatest player of all time?
I completely agree with you. I've heard you say that a handful of times. And my mom, I mean, it would be very hard for me to think anyone else is the greatest player of all time, having been raised by my Giants fan mother, who absolutely idolized Willie Mays. So glad to get to mention him on his birthday. And I think it's him. I think maybe one day we'll be talking about Mike Trout. I think we're certainly headed there. But right now, absolutely Willie Mays.
Yeah, I think once Trout goes over 500 home runs and he starts to approach, you know, 2,500 hits, 3,000 hits, then I think that conversation will change. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Taylor Rome covers the Houston Astros for the Houston Chronicle. And before we get to what's going on at Yankee Stadium the last couple of days, Chandler, today is Willie Mays' 90th birthday. And so I want to ask you, in your mind, when the question is who's the greatest baseball player of all time, who would you say?
I mean, the default answer kind of has to be Babe Ruth, because I think that's what everyone says. But Willie Mays is it'd be tough not to say Willie Mays. I pulled up his baseball reference page just to look, and it's like, it's unbelievable what the man did. He is a legend. You know, I think either Babe Ruth or Willie Mays would work, but Willie Mays certainly stakes the claim as, if not the greatest outfielder ever, maybe the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, I think so too. And I got to say, and it just comes down to the color barrier being broken in 1947. There's like a before and after where you feel like, okay, Willie Mays competed against everybody and Babe Ruth didn't, which for me is the separator, which is why I'd say Willie Mays would be that guy, you know, going forward. And as we talked about with Sarah Langs, maybe there'll be a day when Mike Trout, you know, begins to enter that conversation. All right. Let's talk about the Astros. What do you think the impact has been on the players with the booing at Yankee Stadium the last couple of days?
Well, I don't know. Talk to them. They seem to like it. They seem to always say that it creates a playoff atmosphere and that they love playing in big games and pressurized environments. And if we know anything about the Astros in the last 3 or 4 years, it is that they do turn it on in the playoffs. So I guess that's the right mindset to have, that, you know, if they are going to boo, if the stadium is going to be like this, turn it into a playoff atmosphere and try to play like that. But they just haven't played well in these two games. Alex Bregman has made two kind of ill-advised throws up the line, maybe exerting too much effort. Dusty Baker kind of mentioned that about Jose Altuve as well. Jose Altuve is in a really bad slump, 3 for his last 31. Dusty Baker said he's maybe exerting too much effort here. And I think if you've watched any of these two games, all of the frustration and all of the abuse is really centering on Jose Altuve. And he's a guy that is really struggling right now. He's not performing well at the top of the order. He had 3 hits when he came off of the COVID-19 IL in mid-April. He's got 3 cents. His OPS is down to 622. His on-base percentage is .289. He's hitting at the top of the order, and he's just giving them nothing atop the order. I don't know if you can correlate his struggles to what is being yelled at him in Yankee Stadium, but I will go back to something Dusty Baker said in spring training. He called Jose Altuve mentally strong but sensitive. And I've thought about that since we've been in Yankee Stadium, since the two teams have been playing. I think it's impossible to think that the reception that Jose Altuve is getting from the fans is not affecting him in some way.
Years and years ago, I want to say like 2015, 2016, I had a conversation with AJ Hinch when AJ was managing the Astros and managing Altuve. And he mentioned how for Altuve, like his, to feel good about himself, he needs to get hits and he seeks out hits. And I think it was AJ's perception that when Jose struggled a little bit, then he began to get more aggressive at the plate. And I really thought about that the last couple of days, because it feels like, man, he is jumping at the ball like right from the get-go in each of his plate appearances. As you know, first plate appearance last night, he rips a single. But I'm curious to see if you see some of that as well, where he is just being hyper aggressive.
Oh, for sure. He's a hit chaser. And AJ had told us that too. I mean, Jose Altuve is the epitome of a hit chaser. He is a first pitch swinger. He's a guy that you saw last night, obviously against Jordan Montgomery in the first inning. He hits the first pitch single, and it can go well when it's like that. But if you look at his other plate appearances, I believe he saw less than four pitches in three of his four plate appearances last night. He's swinging early in the count. He's trying to get off this snide. You know, he is a guy that does look at his batting average on the big board. He looks at his OPS, and if he doesn't like the number, he wants to change it right away. And I think we both know that that's impossible. You can't turn a .289 on base percentage or a .621 OPS. You can't turn that around in three or four at bats. But that's just kind of how he's always been, and it's always worked for him. And I guess that's why no one's really said anything, is because, you know, you kind of feel like the hits are going to come. He's going to go on these long streaks where he gets, you know, seven hits and 12 plate appearances and, you know, gets that average up. But that just hasn't happened. It didn't happen in 2020, and it has not happened so far this season.
Of course, the Astros didn't play in front of stands in 2020. They haven't played in a lot of venues so far this year. I suspect that after the Yankees fans' response to the Astros has gotten so much attention this week in the national media, that you might see, certainly not to the level of that you're going to see in Yankee Stadium, but for lack of a better way to describe it, Yankee fans almost inspiring reactions from other fans in other venues. What do you think?
I don't know, Buster. It's been loud everywhere they've been. I mean, take Colorado and Tampa Bay out of it. I mean, their opening series in Oakland was deafening from first pitch till the end of that four-game series. Now, they threw an actual trash can on the field in Anaheim. You know, this is not the first raucous environment they've been in this year. Now, I mean, all due respect to the Yankee fans, this is the most hostile, this is the most kind of just viscerally bad environment that they've been in. This cannot compare to anything they've faced this year, but you know, they have been in tough environments this year. You know, Oakland is going to be rough every time they go back there. They still have to go to Fenway this year. They still have to go to Dodger Stadium this year. So this will not be the last place. And I wonder, too, maybe to your point, if more of the ire will be focused on Altuve and Correa and Bregman. Because we were in Oakland, and when the team was in Anaheim, you know, they're booing Miles Straw. They're booing Jordan Alvarez. They're booing Michael Brantley, who had nothing to do, they were either in the minor leagues or on different teams in 2017. And the one thing you can say about New York is that the hate has been focused on the three main figures that remain from that 2017 team. Maybe we see that more going forward than anything.
This is why I wanted to have you on, because you've been there in person and you know the context a lot better than I would. Before you go, real quick, before the season started, we know that the Astros spoke with Carlos Correa about a long-term deal. They weren't close. I suspect the Astros were concerned, as a lot of teams will be, when he goes into free agency in the fall, about his back and his injury history. How's it going so far for Carlos Correa in what is a really important year in setting himself up for the market?
Well, he's been healthy. I mean, he's played in 29 games, and you know, he's posted every day. I think he got one planned day off during a long stretch. But The back has looked fine. He looks healthy. He just hasn't really performed at the plate. He's not hitting for much power. He's only slugging 430. He's getting pitched away a lot. So he's going the other way and hitting a lot of opposite field singles. A lot of, he's just not hitting the ball in the gap. And he claims it's because that's how pitchers are pitching him. He's not getting pitches on the inner half that he can't pull. But he's got to find a way to unlock some of his power, because he's a guy too that right now he's in an 0-for-15 funk. And, you know, the Astros can't function with both Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa in a slump. So, you know, Correa's OPS is 744 right now, 111 OPS plus. Certainly not the numbers he needs going into free agency, but it's a long season. And I think the most important thing, like you mentioned, he has been healthy. He has posted every day they've asked him to. He does appear durable, and he needs to continue that for the next 4 months.
Chandler, thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you.
All right. Thanks, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Thursday. First up, we have our pal, PK Steinberg. He writes in, how many perfect games have been lost on a wild pitch on strike three where the batter reaches first safely? And Bill Nelson, the one South Carolina weatherman, followed up saying, none, first time. That would be pretty amazing. I tend to believe the weatherman from South Carolina. Do you think this is the case? Have you seen any confirmation?
That is the case. That came out last night. I think the most interesting comp on this, I don't know if you've ever heard this story, from 1917, okay? The Red Sox were involved in a game, and the starting pitcher for the Red Sox walked the first batter and then got into an argument with the home plate umpire. And actually, Taylor, he physically accosted the umpire. He was kicked out of the game. Police got involved. And then Ernie Shore came in to relieve that pitcher, okay? And subsequently, that first batter who walked was thrown out stealing, and then Ernie Shore retired every batter he faced. And so there was a big discussion for years in baseball, was Ernie Shore's effort, was that a perfect game? And it was determined in the end, and I think a decade ago, that did not qualify because a runner actually reached base. You know who the pitcher was?
Tell me.
It was Babe Ruth, who started that game, walked the first hitter, physically accosted the umpire, was ejected, and then Ernie Shore stepped in and saved the day. Pretty cool story.
That is very cool. It would have been interesting if John Means had that approach last night. But as you heard earlier in the podcast, he did not even care. He just wanted to make it through 9 innings.
No, so. He didn't care.
Last one for today, Brian Stoneking, School of Sweat in Our Hearts. He writes in, why aren't teams starting to, or going back to, teaching their young players how to hit the other way? Imagine if a team had three guys who were able to slap it the other way against the shift at will. Those guys strike out less often to most likely. Do you agree with School of Sweat?
Well, I do think there are a lot of people with baseball organizations who would like certain players, not all of them, to change their approach. Like they think that in some cases for some players, it's not good to try to hit home runs. But Brian, I would say this, that a lot of the teams are completely at the mercy of decisions by the players, many of whom have their hitting guru, their hitting guy that they talk to during the offseason when they really work on their swing. And even during the regular season, they'll keep working with their hitting guy. And so the hitting coaches, like Chili Davis, sort of becomes the maintenance man during the regular season as opposed to the architect, if that makes sense.
Got it. All right, everyone. Thanks for writing in today. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter one more time.
Oh, you're so excited. Your Orioles do something, you're all fired up.
Yep. 5 years since anything fun's happened. Remember that, everyone. It'll go away.
It's funny. One of your, another Oriole fan sent me a similar note. He said the last great moment was 2014. All right. That's all for today. I mean, thanks to Jesse, Sarah, Chandler, Taylor, and to John Means for giving us that great moment. Have a great day, everybody, especially the birthday guy, Willie Mays. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.